From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is going to be made tonight at 7 p.m. on University Avenue in front of the Bachelor Forum near the Starry Nights Coffee Shop. The Bachelor Forum and the Gay Alliance are holding both a vigil and a rally. The vigil to honor those lost in Orlando this weekend in the deadliest mass shooting in our nation's history. The rally is intended for those who are already feeling moved to action to call for change. We debated what to do with the Connections program today, and ultimately focusing on anything else felt inappropriate. So over the course of the next 2 hours, I hope we can have a healthy discussion on a number of issues related to this tragedy. The impact on the gay community, the questions about how to prevent this, and more. Listeners, you can call the program this hour. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. 263-9994. You can email me as always, and producer Megan Mack and I are on Twitter. You can find me at Evan Dawson, or you can find Megan at M Mack Media to communicate with the show online. Let me welcome our guests in the studio for the hour. Matt Haig is here. Matt is a Rochester City Councilman. Matt, nice to have you.
Nice being here, Evan.
Peter Moore is here, the owner of the Bachelor Forum in Rochester. Peter, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Evan.
And Kelly Ronald is here. She's a proud straight ally of the LGBTQ community and the past co-chair of the Pride Festival. And what do you have coming up this weekend as well?
We have an event called Ride for Pride, which is a fundraiser for the Gay Alliance. It's a 50-mile bike ride to raise money for the Alliance. It starts and ends at my home in Fairport. 50-mile ride to Pulteneyville and back. If anyone's so inclined to donate, they can do so through the link on the Gay Alliance webpage or through firstgiving.com. Look for the Gay Alliance.
Well, this hour we're going to talk about what it means to be an ally. And look, Peter, not everyone can do what Kelly does, right? I mean, Kelly's she's a straight ally that you were saying for the hour, she might as well be gay.
Okay,
she's
yep.
So straight. She's such an ally. But we are going to talk, I think, what it means to be an ally, particularly at this moment in our history, because we have marriage equality, and a lot of people kind of put their hands up and said, hey, we got it. And now there's a reminder more than ever of the need for not just friendship, not just condoning, but being an ally. But before we get there, let me ask Peter Moore, who owns the Bachelor Forum in Rochester. What's the impact on you and your staff seeing what happened in Orlando?
Yeah, you know, as I've said it in the past, you know, I hope this is an isolated incident and that we don't see this go any place further. But it is a big concern. There's people that still hate gays, the gay community, and other organizations too. So, you know, we've talked to the police chief. They've bumped up, security. We're going to have security at tonight's event also that we'll be hiring. And, you know, we're just going to watch things, you know, and watch things play out and hopefully nothing to play out. So.
Okay. Kelly, you last night, you were where? Where did you go?
I was at a couple places last night. Okay. I was at the Open Arms Church for the vigil that they had, mm-hmm. which was emotionally very moving just to see the support, dead silence, very quiet, respectful people coming together in love and support of fellow human beings. There was no other agenda. There were no speeches. It was just support and community.
And then what else did you do last night then?
And then I was at the Bachelor Forum just to show support and continue that sense of community. Played a couple rounds of pool. Had a good time.
Now, if you don't know, Bachelor Forum is, how do you describe it, Peter?
Rochester's oldest gay bar in Rochester.
Okay.
We've been around since 1973.
Okay. And Kelly, you wanted to go out just to kind of show solidarity last night, huh?
My husband and I actually belong on a volleyball team that Peter Moore's bar is kind enough to sponsor. We like to show support in return. And it was a great place to be amongst friends and people who shared similar views.
Was it somber?
There was a little bit of everything. Some people were somber. Some people were celebrating a sense of community and a place to be. There was a lot of comfort for people who were fearful. I walked into the bar last night just somewhat oblivious to other people's reactions. There were police cars outside, and it took me a moment to realize why. Because as a straight cisgender ally, I don't have that same sense of fear for myself. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't dawned on me until I saw the police presence at the vigil and the police presence at the bar that friends of mine are scared. It's just not right.
Matt Haig, city councilman, you know, I don't think it's even fair to ask somebody what was your reaction to Orlando, because as much as we have to some degree gotten used to mass shootings, which is a horrible thing to ever say, you still can't dream of waking up to 50 brothers and sisters dead to an incident like this. But take me through sort of what the impact on someone like you.
Yeah, Evan, you know, you do think about it. I still remember very clearly where I was sitting in a cubicle in Washington, D.C., where I worked at the time when the Columbine massacre occurred. And then I remember where I was here in Rochester when the massacre at Virginia Tech occurred. It's now increasingly more difficult for me to remember where I have been as more and more of these occur. Somebody's told me that President Obama has responded 15 to 20 times to mass shootings as he's been president. But this one, in part as a member of the LGBT community, and just the sheer brutality and number of casualties, I think it'll be hard for me to ever forget waking up early yesterday morning to see a New York Times and Washington Post alert that there had been a shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando. But it's tough. But these things are far too frequent, increasingly brutal, and it leaves you at a loss for words.
Matt, as both a member of that community but also a member of Rochester City Council, look, I know city council aren't setting necessarily gun policy, et cetera, but I want to ask you if you think it's appropriate to even be talking about that right now. Here was, I noticed a little Twitter conversation this morning that began with a tweet from Bob Duffy with the Rochester Chamber, and of course, formerly the police chief and formerly the mayor of the city of Rochester. And he wrote on Twitter, quote, "The best way to honor the victims of the Orlando massacre is to honor the victims and pray for their families. Please stop the political spins." The implication here is that Bob Duffy wants us to kind of stop calling for new gun laws, stop making this political, to keep those public comments right now to prayer for the families. Do you agree that this is not the time to talk politics or policy?
I don't. You know, if this was the first time that this has happened in the last 10 or 20 years in this country, or if, you know, we have just never seen anything like this. But unfortunately, we do. We see it every day, where people are being shot and killed because of a variety of things. But there's, you know, one or two common denominators. It's high-powered assault rifles and weapons, and oftentimes people with obviously debilitating mental illness. And if we don't start to talk about these things and actually do something about it, I don't know, you know, there's nothing that we're going to do to continue to prevent this. We cannot always prevent the acts of a madman, but we can limit the opportunities to do it. And so I have to disagree with our former mayor. If not now, when? The next one? Because we know it's coming. If not now, when? I think the best way we certainly want to pray for these families and remember these loved ones and remember the lost opportunity that their lives ending now represent. But I think another way we can honor them is to ensure that this doesn't happen again or it happens less. So this isn't political. This is a public health crisis. We talk about public health crises all the time, and guns, and their use by a variety of people, but often people who have severe mental illness that goes untreated, is a scourge in our society. We have to address it.
Now, Matt, I don't mean to no pressure on you, but I will say I hear your name mentioned as someone who, should you so choose, could seek even higher offices in the future. Right now you're a member of Rochester City Council. I don't know what the future holds for you politically. I have no idea what you want politically, and that's not what we're here to grill you on. But I want to ask you if these are the moments that discourage you, because this isn't the first mass shooting we've seen. Like you say, it almost certainly won't be the last. And you look very clearly frustrated with the idea that people are admonishing, whether it's, I don't mean to pick on Bob Duffy. I mean, he's not the only one who's saying this right now.
Right.
Don't talk politics. Now's not the time. But you get admonished, this is not the time. Don't talk about it. Or even any sort of legal possible remedy in the eyes of some is not welcome. Does that discourage you from thinking about politics in your own future?
Well, it does, and you know, and I don't want to put the former mayor in this category.
Right.
But many of the people who are asking us not to talk politics at this time are the same people who, for their entire political lives, have been supported by the National Rifle Association and an extreme gun agenda. You know, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania in a town of 4,000 people. We used to close school the Monday after Thanksgiving because there wouldn't be enough teachers or students in school because they all were out hunting. You know, my grandfather was a hunter. My uncles are hunters. I mean, these were people. I grew up with guns in the household. But, you know, my grandfather never needed an assault rifle to take out a whitetail or to flush grouse from the brush. This extreme ideology, and I'll call it that, this fixation on guns and what it means or doesn't mean to be an American or to be free, it's having severe and significant consequences on people. It ended 49 lives prematurely. Think of the effect that has on people. If this was a disease, if this was the opioid epidemic, which we are seeing, and thankfully so, we're seeing a lot of action on that, but we're having the same consequences because of guns. So it does frustrate me. It frustrates me a lot when you hear people say, let's not talk politics right now, because they're most of the time the same people who don't ever want to talk about this issue. They never want to talk about it because they do not want to talk about their complicity in gun deaths.
Are you saying government has been essentially defeated by a lobby or bought?
Bought and defeated. I mean, vast majority of Americans, gun owners and non-gun owners, say that there should be a, you know, we have the no-fly list for terrorists. We should have a no-gun buy list for people who are suspected of terrorism. Why we don't, you can't get on a plane, but you can go down the street and buy a gun. Why we don't have better mental health services for people. This is not to demonize people with mental health issues. It affects so many of us. We need to deal with that, but they need help. That's a toxic combination, as we see over and over again, mental illness with easy access to guns and ammunition. People are seeking this out, yet time and again, an extreme minority stops common sense gun control laws each and every time.
The Democrat and Chronicle's Jeff Spivak noted this morning that the president, in Jeff's words, had a perfect response to Orlando. It just happened that the president's response to Orlando came 10 days ago on the PBS town hall. And John Andrus, our engineer, let me ask you, can we pull the third clip that we had, the president's comments there? We were going to save that for the second hour, but I think Councilman Haig's comments there prompt me to want to listen to that now. This is President Obama in a PBS town hall just earlier this month speaking about, and it sounds like he could be speaking in response to Orlando. Remember, this is a week and a half before Orlando, and he's responding to a man in the audience who said, you know, I feel like you want to take my guns. It's about government coming for my guns. Here's what the president said.
There are enough guns for every man, woman, and child in this country. And at no point have I ever proposed confiscating guns from responsible gun owners. So it's just not true. What I have said is precisely what you suggested, which is, why don't we treat this like every other thing that we use? I just came from a meeting today in the Situation Room, in which I've got people who we know have been on ISIL websites, living here in the United States, U.S. citizens, and we're allowed to put them on the no-fly list when it comes to airlines, but because of the National Rifle Association, I cannot prohibit those people from buying a gun.
Councilman Haig, what do you think hearing those words now?
I mean, the president has been saying this in some form or fashion, and many of us in local government and state government and in federal government have been talking about this for so long. And, you know, people will come out and say, you know, we need to look at this or we need to think about this or, oh, that's a good idea. But where's the action been? It's been stalled again because Republicans in Congress are beholden to the National Rifle Association and absolutely refuse to move common sense gun control. Each and every time we lose our fellow Americans in these incidents, we have the same response, and the response is inaction. And I don't know what it will take actually to move us to do something about this and try to prevent this. Again, I realize you cannot always stop the work of somebody bent on destroying life, but you can do a heck of a lot more than we've done up to this time.
All right, listeners, there's a lot to think about here already this hour. And you heard Councilman Haig saying he does think that this is a good time to talk about policy. And that doesn't dishonor the memories of the people lost, but instead it does more to honor them by saying, what should we be doing now? If you disagree, if you agree, I know we want to have this conversation. We want to have it productively. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. That is just one of the issues in play following this tragedy. And before I kind of turn to some other aspects, let me just kind of go around the table and just ask. Peter, I'll start with you. What do you think about what you've been hearing from Matt about the frustration when it comes to sort of inactivity when it comes to law?
Right. I mean, I believe we can multitask through this. Warn people's losses, to look at what we need to do to prevent this in the future. I mean, it's honoring the people that have passed. And if we ignore that gun control is not an issue, then we're not looking at the problem. And again, it's honoring the people who lost their lives, not only in Orlando, but all these brutal massacres.
Okay. Kelly, what do you think?
I just get angry. I'm beyond frustrated. Matt is more politically correct than I am. I just get incredibly angry at the lack of action, the lack of progress, of how many more tragedies like this do we have to watch and pay attention to. Where were we? If not now, when? We need to do it now. I am a gun owner. I have shotguns. I enjoy shooting sporting clays. I like to think I'm a responsible gun owner. My family are hunters, or have been. I register my car. I register my dog. The guns in my house don't have to be registered. It's stupid. I really do believe that if common sense, rational gun control could be put in place, we could avoid not everything, but we could avoid some of the tragedies that exist.
All right, let me grab a phone call from someone with, I think, a different perspective. It's James in Rochester. Go ahead, James.
Yes, hello, Evan. I'm a frequent listener, and I respect your program, but I want to be careful how I say this now. Bear with me as I make my point.
Sure.
I'm not an NRA member. I have a shotgun, okay? I don't shoot it. I have it in case of the need. Okay, and I will protect the house. But this is my issue that never gets discussed. With all of these guys that go overboard, and they mentally shoot up a school or whatever the case may be. I knew an old man, he's dead now. He was a West Point graduate, and he works in the U.S. Army with the CIA and the MK Ultra mind control program. Why does it never come up that we're blaming the gun and the situation that we have to handle the gun, but it's always missed about, where was this maniac under whose psychiatric help? the effect of an MKUltra Manchurian candidate when he's blown up a seam is they're calm, they're cool, and they're collected. And they must be destroyed before they snap out of it and start wondering what they just did. Until you understand that there is an element in society that is getting these guys to do this through whatever contacts they have, whatever mental condition they have, whoever the state-sponsored psychiatric handling of this guy is, the psychotropic drugs, the power of suggestion, okay, the wristwatch in front of the eyeballs, okay? Until you bring that up, don't blame the gun, because the gun is going to be needed when stills for the Bilderbergs and the New World Order named Hillary Clinton gets in that White House and the UN troops come marching down the American streets because all we've got are pea shooters.
Okay.
That's what you better address, Evan.
Okay, well, but can I ask, let me just ask
and
a question.
And I know this is a comical edge to you, but this is a real issue.
No, I'm listening, and I want to ask a question then, because the situation with psychotropic drugs and people who are impacted by different forms of sort of either mental illness or drugs, that's not unique to this country, right? I mean, it happens around the world, doesn't it?
Right, but all the other world has fallen. They've given up the guns. America is the last great bastion of gun ownership, and then everybody else is knocked over. Britain, no guns. Australia, no guns. Africa, they're too busy with AIDS to worry about their guns. Europe, no guns.
Okay,
but
James, listen, I think what you're saying, there are some listeners who say, you're right, Great Britain, no guns. Australia, that's not no guns. In fact, Australia has more guns now than the ban 20 years ago, which took maybe 28 to 30% of the guns, which was roughly, I think, 250,000 to 300,000 of the total guns in Australia. But regardless, fewer guns for a while and no mass shootings in Australia and no mass shootings in Britain. I am not at all saying one new law is going to prevent mass shootings. No
right.
way. But we have got a much higher rate.
Hillary Clinton's running for the White House in America.
If you exclude countries that essentially don't have central stable governments, if you exclude some Latin American countries that have very, very high gun deaths by homicide, if you look at countries with stable central governments, nobody has anything close to us when it comes to shootings at this level, right?
What happened? You're considering America, the secret government of America, as stable?
Okay. Thank you, James, for the phone call. Yes, I consider us a very stable government. In fact, I have to say, as it is actually a great comfort to know that had Mitt Romney been elected, we'd be stable. If Barack Obama was elected, we'd be stable. If John McCain had won, we'd be stable. If John Kerry had won, we'd be stable. This is a remarkable country, remarkably resilient and stable. It doesn't always produce the policies that everybody likes, but it doesn't mean that we are on the verge of collapse. I don't think it's healthy to pretend that we are a country on the verge of collapse. We are not. Now, we are a country that has to grapple with some realities about where we are in our place in the world when it comes to stable governments. And when you look around the world, there are not first world countries with stable governments that have gun homicide rates like us. There aren't. Somebody said today, well, France, they had, you know, we had Paris. I said, we did. That was a terrible tragedy. Their gun homicide rate is one quarter what ours is. It's just what it is. So all I'm saying, James, is we're not on the verge of collapse. And I don't want you to think that we are. I'm not belittling your opinion at all. I'm just saying I'm glad to know that we're not on the verge of collapse here. Let me do this here. You've got a bunch more comments coming in via Twitter. I want to get to more of your questions. There are questions on the difference between long guns and smaller guns. A question for Councilman Haig and his thoughts on that. I'll get that. Also, some questions just on the reaction of the gay community in Rochester and really, frankly, around the world after what happened in Orlando. So let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We'll talk about what it means to truly be an ally for the gay community. And we'll remind you what's going on tonight in our community and get more of your phone calls in our first of 2 hours in response to what happened in Orlando this weekend. Coming up in our second hour, we continue the conversation and we shift our focus to the efforts by leaders in the gay and Islamic communities to make sure Orlando does not pit their communities against one another. We'll talk to a leader from the local Islamic community, and we'll take more of your calls and questions as well. It's all coming up next hour on Connections. All right, welcome back to Connections. On Twitter, Rock City Cafe Racers wants to know, he says, we never talked about the hundreds of people killed daily in crimes with illegal handguns. Why? Why do we always go after rifles? Councilman Haig, that's a good question.
It is.
And it's not that we never, by the way, talk about handguns.
Right.
We do, but I take the point that's being made there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, just Saturday, there was a person killed here in Rochester at the Radisson, shot and killed in our own community. Another life lost. I think we probably focus on high-powered assault rifles or automatic weapons because the ability to inflict mass casualties in those is so much more significant. And again, I'll go back to the fact that nobody I grew up with ever needed an automatic weapon to take down a whitetail. I think there is just a lack of need for these types of weapons, either for self-defense or for hunting or shooting clay pigeons. I mean, you just don't need these things.
Well, hold on. Let me try to take up for, we had a caller named James earlier who's concerned about government overreach. One of the initial reasons for, well, the Second Amendment's there was to make sure that I think the founders feared a standing national army because the history of standing national armies, especially at the time of the founding of this country, was not a good one. It was oppressing the citizenry. And the founders knew that. And so a militia was designed to make sure that we didn't need a standing national army and that the citizens could protect themselves. Obviously, things have changed. But Matt Haig, maybe someone like James would say, well, things have changed. We have more powerful weaponry. Therefore, the citizens deserve more powerful weaponry in case the government overreaches.
Yeah, I guess I've just never been sort of the conspiratorial-minded nature of. I don't fear our government. To use his words, marching down the street in some sort of overthrowing of the citizenry. We've had Democrats and Republicans and Whigs and everything else that has preceded us as president. And, it's just not the case. And so that's my opinion. I'm not worried about the government coming and overthrowing us as a people. And so I just don't buy the argument.
Okay. I also want to ask an important issue here. We have got Kelly Ronald here, who has been a past co-chair of the Pride Festival and identifies as a proud straight ally of the LGBTQ community. And ally is a term I've heard more in the last year than I think I've ever heard when it comes to LGBTQ issues, Kelly. And I think it's important to ask you what you mean by ally, because a lot of people may say, well, I'm in favor of same-sex marriage. I kind of think of myself as an ally. Does ally mean more to you?
It does. And I'll clarify a little. I'm a straight cisgender ally. I think the term ally means a lot of things to different people. It can be anything from just being supportive, voting in favor of community-based legislation. For myself, it's been a journey. I've grown into what I see myself being as an ally now. I used to be what I would refer to as gay friendly. I'm not offended. I'm not upset. I have friends who are gay. I'm now more an advocate. I've learned over time that the voice that I have as a straight cisgender ally has some impact on other people, whether that's through education, respectful conversation, the ability to truly educate people about issues that don't impact their lives, where I can help out fellow human beings.
And so in the wake of Orlando, do you feel even more urgently called to be an ally?
Absolutely. This is a group of people who tragically got together in fun and dancing and community spirit and were gunned down absolutely senselessly. But they were targeted, I believe. I mean, investigation, I'm sure, is ongoing, but my current belief is they were targeted. And to be targeted for how you live and who you love, in my mind, is just wrong. And I feel I need to say that as loudly and as often as I possibly can.
Peter Moore owns the Bachelor Forum in Rochester, Rochester's oldest gay bar, going back to the early 1970s. For you now, what does being an ally mean? What does ally mean to Bachelor Forum and to the gay community, you think?
Well, I mean, like Kelly said, I mean, she's an ally. You know, it's, I look at us as a gay community, and we are a strong gay community, but I also look at, you know, we've asked for marriage equality, and Kelly is more welcome in our bar than, you know, ever before, you know. And looking at an ally comes into the bar, supports us, supports our community. And, you know, Kelly had no reason except for of her friends and being an ally to go to the vigil, to come into the bar and support her friends. I mean, it's just, it's wonderful that we have support out there. And I understand there's people that have hatred, and I understand it, I get it. But to act out on hatred is just the absolute negative. You know, and Kelly gives us love, support. I've never seen Kelly angry except for when things happen in our community that hurt our community and things like that. So, you know, having Kelly on our side and having straight allies on our side is just, it's wonderful. It's what we should all be doing. And it doesn't matter, gay, straight, black, white. We've all got to come to love. And that's what's important.
And I think there are more.
That's well said. Go ahead,
Kelly. I think there are more allies out there than there are haters. As many events as we have, and as tragic as they are, they receive a lot of news. We don't get news reports of ally support. That doesn't make the news, but we are out there. And I believe if we are more vocal, our presence will be felt, and maybe my friends won't need to be quite so scared.
Tonight, 7 p.m., it's a vigil and a rally, and as our friend Scott Fearing from the Gay Alliance explains, it's a vigil tonight at 7 o'clock because some members of our community are understandably still mourning and feel that it is still a time of grieving. Others are expressing a concern about action going forward, so it's a vigil and a rally. 7 p.m. tonight, outside of the Bachelor Forum near Starry Nights Cafe on University. Peter, quick reference, where is that for people who haven't been?
Yep. It's on the corner of the University and Atlantic, and there's parking also available at Art Walk Tile. Joe, who's the owner, has given up his lot for parking. So.
And what's the goal tonight?
You know, just to come together and give support to our community and talk about what we can do as a community to prevent this happening here in Rochester and nationally. You know, it'll be definitely very emotional.
Bring your Kleenex.
Peter just looked at Kelly because Kelly warned me before the hour. She said, I'm a crier. I said, Kelly, I've cried on the show in the last month, and we all may cry today a little, and that's okay. And I think tonight you're going to see a lot of tears, but that's part of this process, and that's part of what we're trying to do over these 2 hours is work through this process together. You're hearing Peter Moore, who owns the Bachelor Forum in Rochester. Kelly Ronald is a proud straight ally of the LGBTQ community and a past co-chair of the Pride Festival. Matt Haig is a Rochester City Councilman. Let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Marielle in Mendon. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Something I'd like to comment on, there's such a conflux of factors here between... Is it Islamic terrorism? Is it hate crimes against any group of society, and this one, the gay community? You know, is it mental illness? And for me, what I would like to comment on today is that, and of course, gun control, I should throw in there. you know, as per the issue with mental illness, I think the term mental illness is so broad as to be almost meaningless. If you say physical illness, you know, what does that mean? Does it mean you have heart disease? Does it mean you have kidney disease? It could mean a thousand things. And, you know, within that umbrella of mental illness, it's really the same thing. So I think the general public doesn't have an understanding when you use the term mental illness, you know, what exactly that specifies. And people jump to that very quickly when the actual number of incidents or crimes that are violent involving folks who have mental health diagnoses is very, very low. And when you look at someone like this, it doesn't seem to me he had a mental illness. He had a political agenda. And how many people kill every day, you know, out of just anger or hate? And it has nothing to do with what would be termed their mental health status. And I think that's really important for people to look at and understand.
Marielle, thanks for the phone call. And let me just say that her phone call, I think, is a bit of a bridge into our second hour, because in our second hour, we're going to be welcoming the director, the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester, as one of our guests. And we're going to be talking about some of what Marielle just mentioned. And I think it bears reading a tweet from Jeffrey Goldberg, a journalist, longtime journalist, who said on Twitter this morning, quote, "This needs to be reiterated. Orlando massacre can be about Islamism, access to guns, homophobia, and mental illness all at the same time." That's Jeffrey Goldberg's quote, tweet, and I think that's a good point. There may not be an easy, perfect, cogent explanation, but I think all of those things can be a factor, and we're going to talk more about the question on, you know, can you be gay and Muslim? That's a great question that the BBC did a whole hour program on recently. Very difficult and very important. And we're going to be talking about that more in our second hour. And Islam and the gay community. You've noticed leaders in the last 24 hours saying we are not going to let this pit us against one another. And how do we make sure that happens going forward? So that is part of the question. But let me ask Matt Haig to respond to some of what you said. Also about mental health. I mean, it is so complex. There's no single bill or way to fix, you know, all future shootings. So
no, excuse me. There isn't. But you know, there is a strong connection and proven connection between quite a few of the people who have been involved in the last decade and a half in mass killings. Whether it's Columbine, whether it's Sandy Hook, you know, whether it's the movie theater in Colorado. I mean, these people all had some very severe, debilitating mental illnesses that went untreated. There continues to be stigma around the broader, and I agree with her, it is a very broad definition. There needs to be a lot more education about mental illness. There needs to be a lot more education and support for mental health, and a lot more understanding of what that means. Again, I don't want to demonize people who have mental health issues. I think getting them care and support and treatment is absolutely essential for their well-being and functionality in society. But as it relates to quite a number of these massacres that have occurred over the last 10 years or more, there is a strong connection that an untreated mental illness with access to weapons is not a good thing for us.
Listeners as well, if you want to better understand questions surrounding lone wolves, so-called lone wolves, or connections to terrorism, connections to ISIS, the single most effective communicator, I think, right now is Rukmini Callimachi. She's a correspondent for The New York Times, focusing on al-Qaeda and ISIS. Just this morning on Twitter, she had a 42-tweet thread explaining why it's difficult to single out whether this is a lone wolf or inspired by ISIS or actually connected, but how that happens. If you're not following her, again, her name is Rukmini Callimachi with a C. She is remarkable, and she is much more qualified than I am. I mean, there are certain things that we can talk about on this program, and there are certain things that I'm just not qualified to do, but I'll try to point you when I can to learn more. So, you know, so that's one aspect of it. Mental health is an aspect of it. And Bess Watts, who has been on this program before, she sends a note to remind us that a lot of people in the gay community feel that persecution of gay Americans has continued even after marriage equality. And, you know, whether it is whether it's debate about what's going on in North Carolina or other states, there feels like continued persecution. Just this morning, Marco Rubio was saying that, you know, Islam can't continue to discriminate against gay people. And a CUNY professor was responding saying, Marco Rubio, you don't support marriage equality. You don't support equal rights for gay couples. And there's a feeling that that climate inspires antagonism. I don't know if that led to this. Let me go around the table and ask. Matt Haig, do you agree that that climate is part of this discussion?
Well, it certainly isn't helpful to the discussion. Anytime you demonize someone, as a group of people, say, you know, anytime you hear the phrase "those people," and whether that refers to, you know, somebody like myself who is a gay male, or somebody who is a racial or ethnic minority, or a whole religion, anytime you hear that phrase, it makes them the other. So, you know, people like Senator Rubio, who have, you know, done almost nothing to support the LGBT community in his career as a politician, you know, it certainly has done nothing to help. And many members of his party have certainly done a lot to fan the flames of homophobia and transphobia. And, you know, I don't certainly would not want to say that it causes things like this, but it certainly doesn't help the environment for minorities.
Peter Moore, what do you think?
Well, you know, as I said on my last statement, kind of, you know, if we just all got along and we loved each other for who we are, you know, I mean, take out this hatred, you know, just remove that. And we can accept each other for who we are. We don't have to love each other for who we are. But how about acceptance? And you know, my father is 90 years old. I came out to my dad. He had a tough time with it, you know. And my father loves me more today than he loved me 30 years ago. And again, we're not asking for love. How about just support? How about it's okay? You know, and again, you know, we can go to Trump and he wants to blame Obama for this and he should resign. And that's getting into another thing. This could happen. This happened. This could happen tomorrow. But if we make one change in acceptance and love, this won't happen.
How old were you when you came out to your dad?
30. And I'm 50 now, you know, and it was very difficult. It was probably one of the toughest things in my life that I did, you know, and I didn't want to disappoint my father. You know, I mean, it wasn't something that was okay. But my father comes to the bar on a yearly basis or more and sees the community and the support and the love that we all have together. My father goes, "You have a family here. You have a community there that loves you." He goes, "You're going to probably be one of the first gay mayors." I go, "Dad, I'm not running for politics."
But that's
never
changed,
say
right?
Never, Peter.
I mean, because that is those are the moments where you say, "Well, of course we can change." You know, 20 years ago, that conversation was difficult. I am not at all saying, and look, as a straight male, I can't even imagine for some families. It's different for every family.
Oh, absolutely.
But I have to think that overall, that conversation is happening a little more easily, a little more regularly, a little more acceptedly than 20 years ago, yeah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, again, it's acceptance. You know, we don't have to agree. You know, hey, I don't like the color of the shirt you're wearing or sweater you're wearing. It's acceptance. And it's just, it's okay. You know, it's okay for who we are and what we're doing and stuff. And again, my father loves, excuse me, my husband, like all my other brother-in-laws. So, you know, it's wonderful to see that change, a 90-year-old man, you know, for acceptance, you know. And if this is truly a hate crime, it's sad, you know. And to even to do these things, it's sad.
All right. So I want to juxtapose that with the change in 20 years that you've seen since coming out to your own father, to the fact that there's still, you know, this culture, this debate, this conversation in this country that that the LGBTQ community feels persecuted in many ways. And Peter, this morning I read an online debate, someone saying, "Hey, this should put to rest any notion that someone who doesn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding is as bad as someone in Islam who thinks gay people should die," as if, you know, as if there's not sort of a sliding scale of homophobia, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think just because you wouldn't want someone to die for being gay doesn't mean that you can't be homophobic, I would think, right? I kind of thought that would be obvious, but that's kind of where we are with this debate. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a there's a lot of, how shall I say this, interesting ideas out there, and there is a range of, there's a range of racism, there's a range of homophobia, there is a range of sexism. Anytime you hear somebody say, "I'm the least racist person you know," or "least homophobic person you know,"
they're probably not the least.
I think they protest a little too much sometimes. But you know, I think the story that Peter shares and is a story that so many of us can share, and it's one of transformation, it's one of love, it's one of acceptance, and even in spite of what we've seen over the last 24 hours or more now, which is just so devastatingly sad for us as Americans, for us as LGBT Americans, but really for us as Americans to see this, you know, senseless loss of life. I still see so much hope, you know, because I'm looking across the table here at somebody who's a straight ally who has no reason to stick up for us other than the goodness of her heart.
And I have lots of reasons.
But I look at people like that who have stood up for us so many times in electing fair-minded candidates and advocating for us and supporting our businesses and supporting us in our community with peace and love and respect. So even though it is a sad time right now for our community, my sense of hopefulness and optimism is as strong and perhaps even stronger than ever, because the LGBT community has been used to insults and abuse and violence and threats and intimidation for decades. But, you know, more and more we're joined by straight allies who stand up with us and are willing to take that abuse.
Well, I go back to 100 years ago when women didn't have the right to vote, which is a privilege I hold very dear. And it wasn't women alone. I know we live in Rochester with Susan B. Anthony, but it was not women alone who got the right to vote. It was the men who stood up with them and helped push that movement through. It's not the LGBT community who is single-handedly going to achieve equal rights and equal status. It's the rest of us straight cisgender allies, straight transgender allies, who need to stand up in support of the LGBT community to make sure that equality actually happens, that sliding spectrum of discrimination continues to move. Yes, it's worse to kill people than refuse to bake them cupcakes, but it's still pretty lousy not to bake cupcakes.
And let me just say also, Kelly, you know, your description, going back, that's an interesting callback to women and the right to vote. It's just, to me, it looks like a history of people with privilege.
Yes.
If you're a person of privilege, are you an ally for people who are discriminated against? Are you sort of complacent about it? And it's, so people of privilege are kind of, you seem called upon. You almost feel like you're called upon as a person of privilege
Very much so. And sometimes I don't even realize all of the privileges that I have. I know my husband and I have all sorts of rights legally and socially. No one cares if I reach over and kiss my husband. People treat Peter and Rob a little differently when they do that, which isn't fair. That's a privilege I have as a heterosexual couple.
And we purposely don't do that to not to offend people. And, you know, we don't need to be public about it. That's my private life. And, you know, so, but
and
again.
I'm not into big PDAs either, but if
it's
that's
a well-taken point. It's a well-taken point. You know, I take the point. And we're almost out of time. And let me just read a couple of tweets from a listener named Mikey, who says, "It's tough to hear this discussion today, but important. I, as well as many of my friends in the LGBT community, are shaken. I've never felt so targeted before as a gay Latino American. I recognized the first name released on the victim list. My heart broke when I saw that name. However, we will become a stronger, more vocal community because of this." So we're closing our first hour. One more reminder. Tonight, 7 o'clock, what's going on, Peter?
At the Bachelor Forum at University, 670 University in Atlantic. We're going to do a vigil and support. a lot of tears, maybe some shots.
Well, I suspect after the vigil and rally, there will be a place to go for a drink if you want to.
Absolutely.
That's at the Bachelor Forum. It's near Starry Nights Cafe, if you know that. It's Atlantic and University.
You got it.
Peter, thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And you can kiss your husband anytime in front of me. It's more than okay.
Thanks.
I'll give you a high five. But I thought your stories this hour were beautiful, and I hope that going forward it is peaceful, and appreciate you being
me
here.
Me too. Thank you.
Kelly, thank you for being here. Kelly Ronald, a proud straight ally of the LGBTQ community, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Matt Hague's a Rochester City Councilman. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Evan, for this opportunity.
All right. Short break, and we're going to continue the discussion with the director and the president of the Rochester Islamic Center next.